Annie, you don't have time for this. Talking to yourself? I heard that's the first sign you've gone crazy. Danny spun around. Oh, no. Her lips edged into a phony smile. Hi, Skeeter.
That's all I get. The world goes to shit and all you can say is hi.
Skeeter slinked inside, all smarm and sleaze. His faded cords hung loose on his hips, and the chain connecting a wallet to his belt jingled as he moved. He glided past the candy wrappers and crushed bags of chips like a snake in muddy water. Danny held out the bag. Candy? With bony fingers, Skeeter plucked the entire bag from Danny's grip and fished a single candy out. He held it out to her like he'd done her a favor.
Where's your mother? She owes me for a cue.
Danny's eyes went wide as she took the candy. Skeeter gave her a quarter ounce? That cost $200 before. Now that the power went out, the price of heroin had to skyrocket. She couldn't believe Skeeter would give up that much without payment. You never front her that much. Skeeter grinned, accentuating the hollows of his cheeks.
Your old lady made it worth my while, if you catch my drift.
He unwrapped one of the candies and popped it in his mouth, as his eyes lingered in places they shouldn't.
You ever consider following in your mother's footsteps? With a body like that, you'd fetch a mint.
Danny backtracked until she bumped the display behind her. Skeeter laughed.
Don't get all wide-eyed and skittish, girl. I ain't gonna force ya. My clients like 'em able and willing.
He rolled his hips and sucked on the candy, and Danny pressed her lips together. Skeeter had always been decent to her, despite pumping her mother full of drugs. But how would he react when he learned her mother had moved on to greener pastures? She played it off. I think she's on a bender.
How about you try that again?
Danny hesitated.
What do you mean?
No dealer in this hood will give your mama another dime. She's in hock to all of us.
How bad?
As bad as it gets.
Skeeter stepped close enough to reach out and stroke Danny's hair. She forced her body still.
You and me? We have an understanding. But some of these other guys? Let's just say they won't be so accommodating. You tell Becky if she doesn't pay up, her daughter's gonna have to work it off. One way or another.
Danny swallowed. I'll tell her.
Good.
Skeeter stepped back and shook the bag of Werther's.
Thanks for the candy, babe. You've always been a sweetheart.
He sauntered from the store, leaving unease and fear in his wake. Danny couldn't pay off all the dealers in the neighborhood, nor could she tell them where to find her mother. No one would believe that her mother had wormed her way into the militia's good graces. Danny shoved the single candy in her pocket and looked around. If she'd been on her own, now would be the time to leave town. But she wasn't alone. Not only did she have Colt to think about, but the Wilkinses and the Harpers, too. If Harvey hadn't dragged a dying Colt to safety, Danny would be sitting in a makeshift jail cell at the University of Oregon, waiting for the militia who controlled the area to decide her fate. If Melody hadn't covered for her when the militia shot up Harvey's house, she would be a pile of ash in the burned-out remains of the entire block. Danny owed them her life, and Colt's too. Now, because they risked everything to save her and Colt, they were homeless and scared and unsure what to do. She couldn't abandon them, no matter the danger. Everyone was hungry and dirty and exhausted. Melody almost died. Doug and Larkin and Colt killed more militia members than Danny could count. Even Will suffered. If it hadn't been for Danny and Colt stumbling into their lives, none of this would have happened. She owed it to them to help. Danny grabbed her backpack and shopping bag and took a deep breath. No matter the risk, she had to keep scavenging. There were 3 more stores on her list to clear, and she wouldn't go home until she'd done it. No turning back. Not now. Not ever.
Chapter 2. Melody. 489 Bellwether Street, Eugene, Oregon, 8:30 a.m.
Come on, you stupid thing. Melody wrestled the shower curtain to one side. The fresh rainwater sloshed, and she bit back a curse. I can't spill this. She took a calming breath and tried again, tugging the edge of the curtain toward the waiting 2-liter bottle with both hands. The water rolled toward her like a rising tide, and she struggled to keep the plastic steady. Water splashed over the edge and down into the bottle anchored between her feet. As it filled, she sucked in a much-needed breath of air. So far, so good. The first bottle filled, and she pulled up on the plastic curtain to stop the flow. Only 4 more to go. The makeshift water collection station Colt rigged up on the edge of the patio had done the job. Now they had enough water for a few days. Melody pushed a greasy clump of hair off her face and pulled over the next bottle, filling it without so much as a spilled drop. The more she worked, the better she got, until at last, every bottle sat full, and the plastic curtain held nothing more than a splash of water. She leaned back and exhaled. If only the sky would rain hot coffee and half and half. After screwing the caps on each bottle, she carted them into the apartment. Thanks to the rainy weather of the past few days, and the trash full of empty bottles throughout the apartment building, they managed to collect almost 10 gallons of water. It wasn't close to enough. In the past, survival had always been an abstract concept for Melody. Even after the grid failed, with the National Guard carting in water and food, she hadn't gone hungry. Sure, the pit toilet in the backyard stunk, and she'd been able to wash and eat, and sleep in her own bed. Now, though, the horror of the future had truly set in. No water, no food, no shelter. Nothing they didn't fight for or scrounge up from some rat-infested hole in the wall. She scratched her dirty scalp and frowned. Would it ever get better than this? Staring at those bottles won't turn them into coffee, honey. Melody smiled as Gloria walked past her into the kitchen. I'd settle for an ice-cold shower, to be honest. Gloria poured herself a glass of water and motioned toward the empty patio. She eased into a chair opposite Gloria and focused on the horizon. 3 miles away, Colonel Jarvis had electricity and hot water and enough rations to last for months. They didn't have enough food for the day. The first pangs of hunger hit her stomach, and Melody glanced back inside. Everyone was either gone or still sleeping. She and Gloria were alone. At over twice Melody's age, Gloria Wilkins had seen her fair share of hardship. But this had to be the worst. She caught her former neighbor's eye. Do you regret it? The wrinkles deepened around Gloria's mouth. Leaving? After our house burned to the ground, we didn't have much choice. No. I meant all of it. Taking in Colt and Danny. Standing up to Jarvis. Her voice cracked, and Melody took a moment to swallow. Everything. Not for a second. How can you even ask that after what those men tried to do? Melody focused on a crumbling patch of stucco on the wall. She hadn't been able to sleep since she killed that horrible man. Nightmares of what he wanted, the things he said. She hugged herself, even though she wasn't cold. If we hadn't taken Colt and Danny in, none of that would have happened. Colt didn't do those things. Jarvis and his militia did. Don't blame the people helping us.
I'm not.
Melody risked a glance at the older woman. She'd tried to keep the what-ifs at bay the last few days, but as every angry bruise faded to yellowed skin, she wondered.
I can't help thinking. What if we'd minded our own business?
Gloria blew out a puff of breath. It might have delayed everything a little, but sooner or later the militia would have come for us.
Why? We were following the rules.
As the last word slipped out, Lottie trotted up, hungry little eyes begging for breakfast. Melody frowned.
Okay, maybe not all the rules. But they wouldn't have burned down our houses over Lottie.
You don't know that. Gloria smoothed back her gray hair.
Look at what they did to you, Melody. That room with the beds and the gaudy clothes and the line of men outside the door.
Gloria shuddered. They were going to use you no matter what. She shook her head. All the people like me with nothing to offer. Those are the ones I worry about. How long will they live under Jarvis's control? How long will he let them drain his resources before he puts a bullet in their heads? Melody jerked away. Gloria was right. Jarvis didn't care about a single resident of Eugene. She remembered how Lucas's blood splattered the walls when Jarvis shot him in the head. Angela's face, contorted in terror before Jarvis's minions killed her. Still, Melody couldn't help but mourn. They had spent 5 days scrubbing and cleaning and organizing the top-floor apartment she now sat in. But it wasn't home. Jarvis burned their houses to the ground. Every memento, every treasure she kept from her parents, gone up in smoke and ash. Her family home, destroyed because of what? Because the power went out? It didn't seem real. If it weren't for the bruises and cuts all over her body, she would be tempted to call it a dream. Some twisted nightmare she couldn't wake up from. But the wounds were real. Melody pushed up the sleeve of her shirt and stared at the finger marks now yellowing across her arm. When they weren't cleaning the apartment, they had worked countless hours clearing and fortifying the building. Between the barricades in the front and the booby traps in the back, she felt secure from a thief or an enterprising addict. But not the militia. Not after she'd seen what they could do. She spoke the thoughts forcing their way to the surface. If our experience is anything to go by, Jarvis won't hesitate to eliminate the dead weight.
Who are you calling dead weight?
Major James Larkin's jubilant voice filled the apartment. Melody glanced up. He lumbered out to the patio, arms laden with plastic grocery bags.
Busy morning shopping?
He set the bags on the coffee table and fluffed one open.
Straight from the finest gourmet market in the Pacific Northwest. I present breakfast.
His hands emerged with a crushed box of Pop-Tarts and a partial six-pack of Mountain Dew.
Oh my, what rare and exotic delicacies.
Melody snorted, but her mood lightened.
Where on earth did you find them?
Larkin fell onto the seat next to her with a sigh.
Top floor apartment, 3 blocks over. It's getting harder and harder to scavenge, that's for sure.
Melody took the box and tugged it open. 2 wrapped packages still inside. She handed one to him.
Here, you should eat.
He shook his head.
Ladies first, I insist.
Melody frowned, but handed it over to Gloria all the same.
I should go next time. It's not fair that you and Colt are doing most of the work.
You're injured. You need time to rest.
It's been 5 days. I can help.
Tell that to Colt. If he had his way, you'd be locked up here permanently.
Melody pulled a Mountain Dew free from the plastic holding the cans together.
He doesn't get to make that decision.
She popped the top of the can and took a sip.
Ugh,
This stuff still tastes like pee.
You do know that's why it's yellow, right? Melody's brother Doug laughed as he walked out to join them on the patio. He shook hands with Larkin and sat down.
That joke never gets old.
Melody rolled her eyes.
It does when you've heard it for almost 20 years.
Ouch. I think she just called you old. Larkin pulled a soda off the plastic and handed it to Doug. Is she always so mean? Doug grinned.
Only to her brother.
She pouted. I didn't drink Mountain Dew for years because of you. And I still can't get over the taste. She still remembered the day Doug poured the contents of a can on the sidewalk and let his sister in on the secret. He'd leaned over, his 12-year-old frame still lanky with youth, and whispered about how a guy peed into every can. Melody barked out a laugh, her vocal cords unused to the effort. She stroked her throat. Had it been that long since she'd relaxed? Gloria handed over a Pop-Tart, and Melody took it with a grateful smile. Doug and Larkin split the other package. The four of them chomped and slurped like a group of college kids on break between classes. They had done an amazing job, turning the abandoned apartment into a place 8 people and a little dog could call home. But she knew they couldn't stay. As soon as everyone healed enough to hit the road, they would drive out of Eugene and never look back. The more miles they put between themselves, Colonel Jarvis, and the militia he controlled, the better. Part of her wished they could launch an attack and kill the man. But that was the stuff of movies. No more real than an action hero film. She scooped Lottie up into her arms and broke off a piece of the pastry. Lottie nibbled on it and relaxed into Melody's lap. Maybe Colt and Danny would have more success scavenging. At some point, their luck had to change.
Chapter 3. Colt. 672 Bellwether Street, Eugene, Oregon. 9 a.m. Colt eased into the living room with his Sig Sauer level and ready. Greasy rivulets of rain and grime obscured the morning sun through the window. He clicked on a flashlight and panned the space. Empty. The stink of decaying garbage hit his nose and he snorted. No one cleaned up around here. He cleared the room before ducking into the hall and surveying the bathroom and bedroom. No one stuck around, either. As he holstered his weapon, Colt took stock. Another abandoned apartment on the wrong side of town. Another sad sack of existence wiped out because an EMP fried the grid. Power kept so many people hanging on by a thread. Wreck it, and they flat out couldn't make it. Clothes littered the bedroom floor, cast off jeans and shirts discarded like so many others. He sidestepped the largest piles and stopped in front of a dresser. A single photo frame sat on top. Cheap metal, plastic instead of glass. A kid smiling with a mouthful of holes instead of teeth. Ratty hair yanked back in a ponytail, faded clothes, and bare feet. Big brown eyes still full of hope. He glanced around. Not a single toy or stuffed animal. The kid couldn't live there. He tugged open the top drawer of the dresser. Men's underwear and mismatched socks. A bachelor pad. Colt rooted through the drawers and pulled out a pair of jeans and a few t-shirts. They would fit Will or Harvey without a doubt. He slipped a backpack off his shoulders and stuffed the clothes inside before heading to the bathroom. With a quick unzip, Colt added his own piss to the moldy mess inside the toilet bowl. He'd taken to using whatever abandoned space suited him best, one less worry to deal with back at the apartment. It had been 5 days since they escaped the patrolled areas of the city and Jarvis's control. 5 days since the lights of the university lit up and turned everyone's attention straight to campus. Since then, the streets emptied. Even in the fringes where they now lived, almost everyone was gone. Barely any dealers, only a handful of strung-out addicts hanging on thanks to pills or booze. The glow of the lights attracted everyone else like insects to a nighttime barbecue. He hit the kitchen and opened the cabinets one at a time, looking for anything they could use. The doors squeaked in protest, and Colt came up empty. Nothing but dishes and dust. They didn't need glassware, they needed food. Colt thought about Colonel Jarvis and the men under his command. From everything they had seen and the stories Larkin told, the National Guardsmen who stayed loyal to Jarvis were a full-blown militia. 1,000 men, at least, with a psychopath in command. Thanks to their systematic inspections, the militia controlled not just the University of Oregon, but most of Eugene. Only the bad parts of town had been left to rot. He closed his eyes and relived the moment when he had Jarvis in his sights. A single shot and the militia would have dissolved into chaos. One bullet, and they wouldn't be rooting through forgotten apartments for supplies. The Harpers and Wilkinses would be safe, secure. But he didn't take the shot. Colt made the choice to save Danny instead. Now, they were barely hanging on while Jarvis lived it up on the university campus with electricity and water and food. Every night, he dreamt about sneaking back to campus and finishing the job. But he didn't stand a chance against 1,000 soldiers with orders to kill on sight. Walking away from Jarvis would be the hardest thing Colt had ever done. Harder than leaving a mission unfinished. Harder than following orders to stand down when he could take the shot. As a SEAL, he didn't have a choice. He followed orders, no matter his opinion. Hell, he worked at not having an opinion most of the time. But this was different. The choice to walk away was all his, and he couldn't change it now. No Blackhawks would swoop in and bend the grass as troops jumped out. No backup forces would come along behind and clear the college. Colt was on his own. To survive, he would have to let Jarvis own Eugene. Colt shook off the spiraling thoughts and crouched in front of the sink cabinet. As he tugged open the doors, a roach scurried past his foot. Colt ignored it and poked around, hoping for something more than disappointment. A half-empty jug of bleach was the only reward. Better than nothing. He shoved it in his backpack and stood up. So far, he'd cleared 5 of the 12 apartments in the building, and all he had to show for it was a handful of clothes and a bottle of bleach. He eased back to the front door and tugged it open, and froze. Was that the door or something else? He swore the hinges opened without a squeak the first time. Colt eased the door shut. Silence. Definitely not the door. He spun in a slow arc, checking for hostiles inside the apartment. No flutter of fabric or creak of floor, no flash of hair or glimpse of skin behind the couch. He pulled his gun and held it pointed at the floor. The warped linoleum groaned as he passed the kitchen, and Colt paused at the edge of the living room. A voice in his head whispered to leave, just forget whoever was hiding in that godforsaken slum and move on. But a threat was a threat. Where hadn't he checked? He crouched to peer beneath the couch, nothing but roach carcasses and dirt. He glanced in the tight space behind the massive tube TV. Empty. Colt eased into the bedroom once again. The mattress sagged on the floor, dingy sheets piled in a mess on top. The dresser hugged the wall. He approached the closet, gun drawn, ready. The door protested, and Colt jerked hard, brought his gun up, pointed it into the dark. Nothing visible. He flicked on his flashlight. The space went back farther than it seemed. A walk-in. He panned the light. Hanging racks that should have held shoes or blankets obscured his view. They hung in tatters, holes on the bottom, frayed edges. A balled-up towel gave substance to one sagging shelf. Colt reached for the closest one and caught a glimpse of movement. Out! He pulled back and brought up his SIG, aiming at the space behind the fabric shelves. Out! Or I'll shoot! A keening wail sounded from the darkness, high-pitched and wild. Was it an animal? A stray dog or cat? Hungry pets could turn deadly. He reached out and gripped the fabric in his fist, yanked it clean off the rod. The creature, scrunching into the corner, wasn't a dog or a cat. At one point, it had been a child. Hair hung in matted clumps around her face,
A fairy peeked out from behind a layer of dirt and stains on her nightgown. Bruises covered her visible skin. She blinked and squirmed under the harsh flashlight beam, holding her hands out in front of her to block the light. Her fingernails were ripped and torn, crusted with blood and dirt. Colt eased the circle of light closer to the floor. The child lowered her hands and opened her eyes. Big brown eyes. The girl from the photo. He lowered the gun.
It's okay. I won't hurt you.
She squeaked out a whimper.
Are you here alone?
Colt eased down into a crouch, remembering from somewhere that kids felt less threatened when grown-ups came down to their level. The child nodded.
Shit. Had she been here for the entire month?
That explained the complete lack of food and general filth, but how had she managed to get by?
If she lived there with her father, where was he?
Colt glanced behind him. From everything he'd seen, no adult still lived there.
There would be some evidence, surely, a cigarette, food wrappers, empty beer bottles or cans, something.
He glanced back at the girl. She still crouched in the corner with her knees pinned to her chest, willing her body to disappear.
For once in his life, Colt didn't know what to do. He couldn't leave her there, filthy and starving. Someone without a conscience could find the girl next. But he couldn't bring her back to the apartment either. They already had too many mouths to feed, and she didn't look willing.
Colt dug into his pocket and pulled out half a piece of beef jerky, the last of his breakfast. He held it out. The child's eyes went wide. Her tiny nostrils flared. She leaned forward and dropped her knees to the side. Her mouth opened. Words tumbled out in a whisper. Colt leaned forward.
What was that? I can't hear you.
Again, she mumbled, too quiet and indistinct to understand. Colt thrust the hunk of dried meat toward her. She grabbed it with a grubby hand and shoved the whole thing in her mouth.
Sorry.
The second Colt processed the single distorted word, he spun away from the closet. It was too late. Wood grain flooded his vision, and the crack of a bat against his skull knocked him to the floor.
Chapter 4. Colt.
672 Bellwether Street, Eugene, Oregon. 11 a.m.
The pain woke him up. A constant thumping walloped his head as if a jackhammer splintered his skull. He reached for his head, but his hands didn't make it more than an inch. Something tacky and thick pulled at his skin and arm hair.
The sound rumbling up from his chest was half word, half grunt. His tongue took up his entire mouth, and his spit stuck like hardening cement. Maybe the jackhammer was drilling in the wrong place.
He blinked, but the world refused to cooperate.
Splashes of white and blue rushed by like the scenery on a carnival ride.
Christ. He closed his eyes and focused on breathing. In. Out. In. Out.
The tilt-a-whirl of his brain slowed. The nausea threatening to heave up his paltry breakfast receded.
What the hell happened to me?
Colt opened his eyes and the room didn't spin. Now he knew why all he could smell was piss. He sat on a toilet, hands duct-taped to the seat. A sink clung to the wall opposite his face. He leaned forward and his forehead melted against the cool porcelain. The throbbing eased, and he took stock. A tub caked in dirt sagged on his left. No shower curtain. Nowhere to hide. The window above the tub showed promise. 2x2 with frosted glass that looked too old to be double-paned. If he knocked out all the glass, he might fit. He thought it over. 50-50 odds. Might get stuck halfway. He swiveled his head to the right, forehead pressed against the sink. The door to the room was wedged tight into the frame a few feet away. He gave his hands a tug. They didn't budge. Colt closed his eyes and tried to remember. How did I get here? He thought back through the morning, leaving for a scavenging mission, hitting apartment building after apartment building and coming up empty. The kid in the closet. His eyes popped open. She'd been bait, plain and simple.
and I fell for it. Colt cursed himself and yanked on the tape. I've gone soft.
A few days with normal people who didn't understand the current state of affairs, and look what happened. When he walked out of the University of Oregon, he'd been a free man on his own. No one to hold him back, no one to affect his decisions. Then he rescued Danny. Every decision after that point had been with her in mind. He didn't leave. He didn't disappear into the wilderness like he'd planned. No. He'd gone and made himself a family. Was she a burden? Yes and no. She understood the way the world worked now, maybe more than anyone. And Colt cared for her. She'd become the closest thing to a daughter he'd ever get. If he'd stuck with just her, if they'd left town at the first opportunity, Harvey and Gloria and Will would have a home. Melody wouldn't have suffered at the hands of Jarvis and his men. Hell, Larkin would still be following orders, all because Colt didn't follow his gut and leave. He tugged again on the tape and it rolled against his skin, tightening its grip. Rocking back and forth, he tried to loosen the glue, but it held fast, ripping out the hair around his wrist, but not yielding an inch. Colt thought about everything his new companion suffered because of him. The fire that destroyed the Wilkins and Harper homes. Gloria and Melody's kidnapping. Their abuse at the hands of Jarvis and his men. For all that he wanted to take Danny and run, he couldn't. He owed these people a safe place. He couldn't leave them until they were secure and capable of fending for themselves. They saved his life. Danny's, too. Colt couldn't turn his back on them, not now. He sat up and braced his feet on the floor. With a deep breath, he rose up, straining against the tape and the toilet. The seat wobbled. He pulled harder, grimacing against the tension in his arms and the heat and pain surrounding his wrists. Nothing. Sagging back against the toilet, he sucked in a frustrated breath. With a grunt against the discomfort, Colt twisted his upper body and inspected the tape. It wrapped around each of his wrists at least three times, around the toilet seat, and then all the way down to the base of the toilet. Whoever secured him took their time. Colt thought about what he knew. It had been a single man's apartment, a bachelor pad, despite the kid in the closet. Was he still in the same place? He thought back to clearing the bathroom and glanced up. The same broken shade covered the single bulb in the ceiling. I haven't been moved. He didn't know if that was good or bad. It could mean there was only one adult and a kid to worry about, but counting on that would be foolish. There could be 20 people waiting on the other side of the bathroom door. Colt shifted on the seat and frowned. They took everything. His gun, his backup knife in his right pocket, his wallet, the bags he'd carried. By now, they knew who he was and what he was up to. If the militia was involved... Damn it. He tugged on the tape again, but it was hopeless. Unless he found a way to rip the toilet off the floor, he wasn't getting out of there without help. He had to hope that whoever hit him upside the head and taped him up wasn't in with Colonel Jarvis. Best case scenario, he could sweet-talk his way out of there. Worst case, this might be the last resting place of Colt Potter. Leaning back, he closed his eyes. He couldn't do anything about his current predicament. Rest was the best option in a hostage situation. The more he could conserve his energy, the better he could take on whatever came next. There would be an opportunity, and he needed to be ready for it. Colt startled awake some time later. Something plinked against his cheek, and he jerked back. Found the source, scowled. Get out. The little girl from the closet stood in the open bathroom door, popping little candies in her mouth, one after the other. Her matted hair hung in her face, and her grubby little toes dug into the dirt on the floor. She was filthy, worse than a street urchin or a runaway. But she smirked at him like the richest little princess. I said, get out. She wiggled against the door frame, but didn't leave.
Dad says, I ain't supposed to listen to you.
She pointed a neon green candy at him.
You're a bad man.
Colt managed to keep his expression vacant and even. Tell your dad I want to speak with him. She eyed him with the same brown eyes that pulled on his heart in the closet.
No.
Why not?
Because.
She shook the bag in her little fist and poured out a pile of candy before shoving them all in her mouth. Her cheeks swelled like a chipmunk. As she chewed, rainbow spit leaked from her lips and dribbled down her chin. He flexed his hands, gave the tape a tug. It wasn't going anywhere. He needed a new plan. After staring at the girl's faded nightgown and the sleeves that barely reached mid-forearm, he glanced up, smiled.
So, what's your dad like? Is he nice to you?
The little girl stopped chewing and wiped her face with her dirty sleeve.
Sometimes.
What happens when he's not nice?
She fidgeted with the bag of candy and glanced in the hall.
I get locked in the closet.
Is that why you were in there when I found you, because your daddy wasn't nice?
Maybe.
She glanced at the hallway again.
If you come over here and help me with this tape, I can protect you. Your dad can't hurt you if I'm free.
She wavered, her whole body swaying first toward him, then away. A little more convincing, and she might be his ticket out of there. Colt grinned even broader.
I've got a daughter. She's not that much older than you. I bet the two of you would really hit it off.
The little girl's face closed up, the wide, curious stare replaced with a tight frown.
No, Daddy wouldn't like it.
He doesn't have to know. It could be our secret.
She focused on the wrinkled, almost empty candy bag.
I've got a lot more candy back at my place, and food, and water, too. You could come stay with me for a while. Eat all you wanted.
The bag rustled in her hand.
How about you just loosen this tape a little bit and I do the rest?
She rose up onto the balls of her feet, but didn't take a step. Colt bit back the words of frustration on his tongue. The girl was his best chance. He couldn't wreck it. Colt managed another smile.
My name's Colt. What's yours?
She opened her mouth as another voice called out.
My girl knows better than to tell a stranger her name. Ain't that right, sweetheart?
Chapter 5 Danny 489 Bellwether Street, Eugene, Oregon, 11 a.m. What do you mean, he's not back? Danny paced the length of the faded living room. Where did he go? Larkin shrugged.
North. He planned on hitting the last apartments on Bellwether before it turned completely commercial.
Danny chewed on her thumbnail until it splintered. There's nothing up there. All those places are full of addicts and crazies, half of them rent by the day. As soon as she walked in the door after clearing her portion of the street, Danny went searching for Colt. First, she checked the balcony where the Wilkins family sat, staring out at the south side of town in their old street. Then she eased into the hall and peeked in the bedrooms. Doug slept on a bed shoved against the wall, his boot-clad feet dangling over the edge, but all the others were empty. No sign of Colt. It wasn't until she'd interrupted Larkin and Melody's debate about personal hygiene and the status of the city's sewers that anyone noticed Colt's absence. Now they were blowing it off like he'd decided to take the long way home after work. Larkin stretched before leaning back against the couch.
I wouldn't worry. Colt can take care of himself.
She cut him a glance. He's never late. The soldier didn't know Colt like Danny did. Sure, Larkin and Colt spent time at a military hospital together years ago. But Larkin hadn't survived a burning building or jumped three stories to safety with Colt. Danny knew the man like no one else. Even if he'd found a reason to delay, he'd have come home, explained, and gone back out. He wouldn't blow a deadline. Maybe it was the way she stared Larkin down, or the edge of anger in her voice. But at last he threw her a bone.
If Colt doesn't show in the next few hours, we can assemble a team and check it out.
Danny shook her head. Not good enough. Colt needs help now. In a few hours, it could be too late. Don't you think you're overreacting? Melody spoke up for the first time since Danny interrupted.
With her hair pulled back in a ponytail, the bruises across her cheek and neck stood out in angry blotches. Of all people, Melody should understand the risks of leaving Colt to fend for himself. Captain Ferguson almost killed her. But she thought Danny was overreacting? What if Colt said the same thing after you disappeared? What if he waited for a few hours to rescue you? Melody opened her mouth, but shut it just as fast. Her hand lingered on her still-healing ankle as she glanced at Larkin. That's it? No acknowledgement of the truth? No, gee, Danny, I guess you're right. I should knock their heads together. She plucked a rifle off the battered coffee table and slung it over her shoulder. If Melody wasn't going to support her, then the heck with it. Danny didn't have time to convince her or Larkin of the potential danger. Colt needed help, and Danny planned to give it. I'm going to find him before it's too late.
Colt's a big boy. He can get himself out of a jam.
Danny refused to look at Larkin as she tightened the laces on her dirty kicks. You don't know what some of the people around here are like. A month without a fix? If any addicts are still alive, they're out of their minds with cravings. They could do anything. She thought about some of the worst days with her mother, when they didn't have any money and her mother could only think about how to score. Lies, violence, manipulation. Everything was on the table when an addict needed a hit. Everything. Larkin blew her off.
Colt can handle a strung-out druggie.
You're underestimating the threat.
You're not giving Colt enough credit.
Danny bit back another retort. Arguing with Larkin would get her nowhere. We're wasting time. I'm leaving. She strode to the door without looking back. If no one wanted to admit Colt could be in trouble, fine. She would rescue him all by herself. She reached for the door handle when Larkin called out.
Hold on, I'm coming.
His feet thudded on the laminate floor as he loped to catch up with Danny.
I can't let you get yourself killed on some wild goose chase. Colt would never forgive me.
Danny tugged open the apartment door. What if everything I've said is true, and Colt's really in trouble? He smiled.
Then I'll owe you an apology.
I won't hold my breath. Danny ducked out the open door, and Larkin followed. They hit the street side by side, and Larkin's easygoing nature morphed into army awareness. Gone were the lazy, plodding steps of inside the apartment. In their place were solid strides and glances in every direction. Danny hustled to keep pace. She hated to admit she was glad he came along, but it was the truth. She leaned a bit closer as they walked. Thank you for coming. Larkin nodded.
Finding Colt won't be easy. He could be anywhere.
Danny left that morning before Colt and Larkin divided up their search. She didn't have a clue where Colt had gone. She glanced at Larkin, with the corners of his mouth tipped down in a frown. He looked every bit the disgruntled soldier. At twice her age, he must have seen his fair share of missions gone bad. Danny hoped this time he was right. And Colt was delayed, but safe. An I told you so chorus would be music to her ears if Colt was okay. Larkin slowed as he approached the corner and held out his arm for Danny to stop. After he cleared the cross street, she joined him. Do you know his route? He nodded.
More or less.
Where should we start?
At the beginning.
Larkin motioned down the street.
The 600 block.
Together, the pair of them navigated past broken windows and abandoned cars, pausing every few storefronts to assess and regroup. Danny debated telling Larkin about Skeeter and his demand for payment. Her mother's debts weren't anyone's concern but her own. But if Skeeter caught any of her friends... Danny shoved the what-ifs aside.
If she remembered right, then Skeeter kept to the block south of Prairie, almost half a mile behind them. Big Nicky controlled the streets to the north, all the way up to the edges of town, where houses and buildings gave way to forest and wildlife. Would they still respect the pre-EMP order? She didn't know why not. Even after the grid collapse, a drug dealer wouldn't give up his territory. Not willingly. Danny exhaled. She was safe from Skeeter for now. They cleared the block and paused at the entrance to the first building across the street.
We clear as a team, one hallway at a time. I hit the inside of the apartments, you stand watch.
Danny shot Larkin a look. He was boxing her out? I can search as well as you can. He shook his head.
We need a lookout. If Colt's in trouble, there must be a fair number of hostiles. One strung-out loner wouldn't take that man down.
Larkin had a point. If they charged him without cover, they could end up captured. Or worse. She conceded. All right, I'll stand watch. One floor at a time, they cleared the first building. No sign of Colt, other than the complete absence of anything worthwhile. If he'd been ambushed before reaching the building, there would be something of value left behind. A can of peaches, or a bottle of dish soap, something. They moved on to the second, then the third and the fourth. It was never-ending and hopeless. 2 hours later, Larkin stopped at a fifth-floor landing. The apartment building squatted on the corner of the last block of Colt's search area. He ran a dirt-streaked hand over his face, smearing dust and sweat into makeshift war paint across his cheeks.
We're never going to find him.
Danny leaned back against the faded floral wallpaper and used her sleeve to wipe her forehead. We can't quit.
It's worse than a needle in a haystack. It's a seal in the city. He's too good, Danny.
Let's search the building. There's only a floor or two left.
And after that?
She turned to Larkin, wishing she could argue. But he was right. Colt could be anywhere. If he'd followed a lead or cleared the block early, he could be halfway to Washington State by now, or back home waiting for them. If they didn't stumble upon him in one of the places down the hall, that would be it. Colt would have to find his own way home. Danny checked the rifle in her hands for the 100th time that day and shoved down her disappointment. Colt would be all right. He would have to be. She didn't know what she would do without him. He'd saved her life and showed her what it meant to care. Nothing would be the same if he disappeared. Danny motioned toward the hall. Those rooms aren't getting any clearer. Larkin snorted and took off toward the first door. As his shape blended with the gloom of the hall, a teeming crash shook the entire floor. Danny brought the rifle up and crouched against the wall as Larkin dove to the ground. He called out from the dark. See anything? No. Danny held her breath, waiting for some other sign. She knew it was Colt. It had to be.
Chapter 6. Colt. 672 Bellwether Street, Eugene, Oregon, 1 p.m. A man stepped into view, but the barrel of Colt's own Sig Sauer captured his attention. It pointed sure and steady from the outstretched arm of the closet girl's father. Colt dragged his eyes up the length of cold metal and met the gaze of the temporary owner. Same brown eyes as his little girl, same dirt-caked skin, but that's where the similarities ended. The man's cheeks sucked in with every breath, and the scraggly beard coating his jaw quivered. His eyes sat in hollow sockets, too strung out to blink. No sudden movements, no sleight of hand. Colt couldn't risk it. Drug addicts ran the spectrum from ordinary men with good hearts to the ones who did anything to score. Colt guessed this man fell into the latter camp, resourceful and without morals. He kept his voice even. Good trick you've got there, using your kid as bait. The man's chest puffed with twisted pride. Thought of it myself. How about you let me go? The gun rocked back and forth. Why would I do that? You got my weapon and all my things. What good am I as a prisoner? Not a chance. You're staying right here. What's the point? Now you'll have to feed me and find a place for me to piss. Just save yourself the hassle and cut me loose. The father stuck his thumbnail in his mouth and chewed on it. The gun shook in the air. You're not fooling me. Colt raised an eyebrow. About what? The man motioned at his daughter. Go get him, baby. She scampered from the bathroom, her mouth stained in a multicolored rainbow. Moments later, she returned, holding up a pair of sneakers and clothes Colt lifted from another apartment a few doors down. Her dad tilted his head. You ain't alone. Otherwise, you wouldn't be stealing ladies' shoes and jeans. There's more of you somewhere. I want to know where. I stole those to trade. Colt widened his stance on the toilet, twisted his lips into a smirk. Women will do anything for shoes, if you know what I mean.
I don't believe you.
Colt leaned back, feigning boredom. Suit yourself, but in about 5 minutes, you're going to regret keeping me here. Why? Because I got to take a shit the size of Mount Everest, and I don't think you want me doing it all over your bathroom floor.
You're sitting on the toilet, asshole. Use it.
Colt tugged on his hands. I can't. You taped the lid shut. The druggie swore and rubbed at his face with his free hand. The gun barrel wobbled all over the place. If Colt only had a bit of leverage, he could take the man out with a well-placed kick. But it wouldn't get him anything but a hard time. He needed out of the duct tape. Colt squirmed around on the seat and screwed up his face like he couldn't hold it.
Ew, Daddy, what's that smell?
The little girl pinched her nose and stuck out her tongue.
Sorry, man, like I said, I gotta go.
The girl's father stared at Colt. It was like watching a film in slow motion. All the options paraded through his head one after the other and washed across his face plain as day. Shoot him? No. He had a kid to think about. Leave him there and let him take a dump all over the place? No, he didn't want to clean up the mess. Let him go? Not a chance. The guy stood there, confused and unsure, while Colt squirmed.
Come on, man. If I let loose in these pants, you'll never get the stink out.
Fine.
The girl's father turned to his daughter.
Dump those clothes and go get some scissors, quick.
She ran out of the room while her father paced back and forth. He ran a hand through his hair every few steps as he waved the gun about.
You try anything and I'll put a bullet in your head, you understand?
Colt nodded. The little girl came back and her father pointed at Colt's hands.
Cut one of his hands loose.
He pointed at Colt.
I meant what I said, not a move.
Colt inhaled and braced himself for action. He counted on the man's reflexes being too slow. The little girl stepped up to him and bit her lip as she opened the scissors. They were so big she had to hold one side with each hand. She opened the blades. Rust pocked the surface. Colt tensed.
You know how to use those things, right?
Course she does. Now shut up and let her work.
The man nodded at the girl.
Go on, baby. It's all right.
The girl nodded and turned back to the task. Colt twisted to the side to give her the best angle. Were his shots up to date? Dying of some nasty infection after surviving bullet wounds and a 3-story fall would be ironic at best. She stuck the scissors through the gap in Colt's arms and forced them shut. Even from Colt's poor angle, he could see they would never open. The tape stuck to the metal and held fast. The little girl tugged and pulled, but it was no use.
Daddy, they're stuck. I can't do it.
She sagged and looked up at him. The man didn't know what to do. He shook his head back and forth, opened his mouth and closed it again, glanced all around the bathroom. Colt spoke up.
You got a knife? A sharp one will probably cut through it.
The drug addict mumbled curses beneath his breath and shoved the gun in his waistband. He stepped forward and yanked on the scissors. It took him 3 tries and some serious effort, but he pulled them free. He turned to his daughter.
You watch him, honey. If he does anything, you holler, all right?
The girl nodded and her father left the room. Colt couldn't wait there forever. Every minute the circus kept up, his chances of escape dwindled. The man would either get sick of him or do something stupid and someone would die. Colt hoped it wouldn't be the little girl.
How about you go take a nap, huh, sweetie? I bet you're tired after all that candy.
She rose up on one foot, balancing like a ballerina.
I'm not tired. I could stay up all day and night, just like Daddy.
If you dig through my bag, you'll find a pack of gum in the bottom. You can have it. She twirled around on her toes with her arms up in the air.
I don't like gum. Too chewy.
Colt exhaled. He didn't want the kid there when he took on her father. There might be some clothes, something pretty for you. The girl paused halfway through another turn.
Like a necklace or a tiara?
Colt plastered on a smile. You never know unless you find out. Her father stepped back into the room, holding a giant bread knife with a foot-long blade. The little girl squeezed under his arm and scampered away. He watched her go and shook his head.
Kids, they can never stay in one place.
She seemed to like the closet just fine. The man pinned Colt with a look.
Keep talking like that and I'll leave you here, shit or no shit.
Colt managed another nod and turned his back on the man. The knife blade rubbed against his forearm as the man slipped it between Colt's hands. He sawed it back and forth against the tape. Little by little, the tension in Colt's arms eased. He worked on keeping his body relaxed and easy. Too much tension and the man might notice. The first section of tape gave way. He could move his shoulders. A minute later, the man hacked through the next section and Colt's wrists separated, but he was still taped to the toilet. Colt pointed with his head at the toilet seat. You'll have to cut the tape on the seat, too. The man shot him a look.
I ain't stupid, hold on!
He crouched down in an awkward sideways stance with his gun digging into his ribs. As he worked on the tape, Colt ran through the options. Only one came to mind. He inhaled, focused his mind, waited, almost there. The second the tape connecting his right hand to the toilet seat separated, Colt dove for the gun. He wrapped his fingers around the butt and yanked it free as the man staggered back. With a shout, the man swung the knife. Colt ducked and it went wide. Spinning around, Colt grabbed the toilet seat in his left hand and yanked with all his might. It ripped free from the toilet. Colt fell back from the force, landing hard inside the tub. His legs stuck up in the air and he couldn't get leverage. The drug addict lunged for him again with the knife. Colt cocked the gun, aimed, and pulled the trigger. It clicked. Shit. The man laughed and lunged for him again.
You think I'd wave a loaded gun around with a kid in here?
He jabbed at Colt with the knife. It sliced his shirt and nicked his side. He grunted and heaved himself out of the tub with all his strength. He collided with the man and propelled him back. The man's hip hit the side of the sink and the knife clattered to the floor. Colt whipped the gun around in his grip and used it like a club. Swinging high and fast, he slammed the butt into the side of the man's head and he went down, crumpling into the sink before sliding onto the floor. A scream rose up from the doorway. The little girl stood there, wearing one of the shirts Colt picked out for Danny. It reached her knees. He stepped over her father and brushed past her. He couldn't save them all.
Chapter 7. Danny. 672 Bellwether Street, Eugene, Oregon, 2 p.m. The door to an apartment crashed open, and Danny brought up the rifle. She squinted into the dark and took aim as a shape barreled into the hall. Her finger twitched on the trigger.
It's all right, Danny, Larkin bellowed. It's Colt.
She eased off the trigger and lowered the rifle as Colt and Larkin approached. Colt reached for her and brought her to his chest for a quick hug.
We need to move. Now.
She pulled back and looked at him. Blood matted half of his hair, and duct tape hung in twisted strips around his wrists. Are you all right? He nodded.
I'll fill you in later. Right now we need to hurry.
The three of them rushed down the stairs and into the dilapidated lobby without another word. Larkin peered out the dirty glass.
Do we need to hole up somewhere or head straight back?
Let's loop around to the south and come up from the other direction.
Copy that.
Larkin pushed open the door and glanced around.
It's clear.
He headed out with Colt and Danny on his heels. They kept to the shadows, ducking into doorways and pausing in alleys as they navigated toward the south. Danny thought about Skeeter. She couldn't be seen on the street. Not with Colt and Larkin.
On the edge of his territory, she grabbed Colt by the arm. There's a dealer down here looking for my mom. We're almost in his hood. If he spots me, it'll be bad. Colt pulled her into a doorway hidden from the